The meeting of the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee will come to order. And as the first order of business, Representative Moran, would you move the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. Carries. Thank you. Today we're having a presentation on early childhood education providers. And the first testifier is Jenna Rubel. Is that Rubel? Rubel? Okay, from St. Paul Schools. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm very excited to be here today and share with you about pre-K programming and outcomes in St. Paul Public Schools. My name is Jenna Rubel, and I'm the pre-K to third grade alignment program manager in St. Paul. And I'm going to be sharing some information with you about our pre-K programs and outcomes. I'm going to start with a broad overview of the district demographics just to set a context for you, and then we'll highlight our early learning efforts, including one of the largest operating, proven successful, and longest operating, actually, pre-K programs in the state of Minnesota in our pre-K program. We are in St. Paul, blessed with an amazing diversity. As you can see, we have a healthy balance of ethnic groups. This diversity provides a rich cultural environment and opportunities to learn through multiple perspectives. When examining our pre-K demographics, you also will notice that they are similar to the overall district demographics. However, in pre-K, we serve a larger or higher percentage of students who are English language learners. Our pre-K program is designed to meet the needs of students who are most at risk for later school success. We have enrollment priorities for students who qualify for special education, free and reduced lunch, and those whose first language is something other than English. 85% of the children we serve qualify for one or more of those priorities. Our program is in extremely high demand right now and is the preferred pre-K program for many St. Paul families, as evidenced by our enrollment data. We serve 1,100 students this year, and to meet demand, we could easily double our enrollment. We currently have 747 students on our wait list not being served. As I mentioned, St. Paul has been in the business of providing quality pre-K for many years, and actually decades. We continue to evaluate our work and increase the rigor. In our efforts to increase access to those students most at risk for later school success, in 2004, we partnered with the local McKnight Foundation and Nancy Latimer, who was the program director at the time. Through this work, Project Early Kindergarten began with the goal of serving students directly in a school-based program that was aligned with the K-6 elementary program and focused on eliminating the achievement gap so those children most at risk could begin kindergarten at the same level as their peers. To increase access, we discovered that we needed to make the process accessible to parents. Therefore, we designed an easy application to understand and complete. Income could not be a barrier, so the program was free to all, and most families needed a way to get their students to school, which meant including transportation. We also knew it was imperative to hire staff that were bilingual and bicultural in St. Paul, and most importantly, provide materials and information that in families' home languages, so families could be informed partners with us in education. Project Early Kindergarten was first implemented with students in 2005 in 10 district schools serving four-year-olds. That program expanded to the current district-wide model for pre-K in 2008 and is currently serving 1,200 students, or has 1,200 student slots. In addition, beginning in 2006, through a partnership with then Resources for Child Caring, now titled Think Small, Leaders in Early Learning, the same instructional model that we're using in the schools was implemented in licensed child care centers and family daycare homes, serving an additional 400 three- and four-year-old students. In order to provide a high-quality program, we know we need to hire highly qualified licensed staff for our work in the classroom with families. We hold our teachers to very high standards. You can ask them. They would tell you we do. We also provide clear expectations as well as high levels of support for our staff. We have very little turnover in our teaching staff, which we relate directly to the levels of support that they receive. In efforts to align with the K-6 instructional model, we use a standards-based curriculum aligned to the K-12 Common Core Standards, English Language Arts primarily, called Discovering Our World. We have also created the Early Childhood Workshop model, which is an instructional model used in all pre-kindergarten classrooms across the district and is an integrated model of readers and writers workshop combined so that children will experience the same kinds of language teaching and instructional language in pre-K as they will receive when they hit kindergarten and all the way up through fifth grade. We've trained many educators to use the Early Childhood Workshop model through presentations at conferences such as the International Reading Association Annual Conference, Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, and MNAFI, or Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education. There also are several districts across the state and as far away as Eau Claire, Wisconsin, who are also using our Early Childhood Workshop model in their programs. Our model created by St. Paul Public Schools. In our program, we are extremely focused on our data. We look at student outcomes as well as instructional practices, including teacher-to-student interactions and student-to-student interactions using the class or the classroom assessment scoring system. Data-driven decision-making is what we do. We focus on the types of instruction offered and how they are differentiated for individual students' needs and interests. In addition to differentiated support for children in the classroom, we have comprehensive differentiated support for families as well. Last year, we served 980 of our 1,152 families in at least one event throughout the year. Bilingual and bicultural parent educators served two-thirds of those families. These events are, there are a variety of things, including math and literacy-focused events, as well as opportunities such as Take Your Parent to School Day, which helps children transition from pre-kindergarten into kindergarten and kindergarten into first grade in our district. The events are based on the needs of individual schools and students and families. We offer a six-week positive behavior intervention support program or course for families in addition. They either are families who are self-selected to be in that course and or are referred by staff and teachers. We have finished one of those courses actually just recently, offered both in Spanish and English, and the reflections and feedback from families has been really, really powerful around that course. Principals in our buildings are the instructional leaders and include pre-K and four-year-olds into their existing structure of pre-K to fifth grade or sixth grade in our buildings. Pre-K basically is treated as another grade level. Of course, the Office of Early Learning, which is where I am a staff member from, are used as experts in how young children learn and make sense of their world. We partner closely with principals and teachers, students and families to support the whatever needs they have for students to have successful first school experiences. Of course, none of this could be done without funding. Our program is funded in large part by a local referendum, just renewed, thankfully, from our St. Paul voters, with some school readiness state aid. We are also fortunate to be part of two pre-K to third grade grant projects right now, one of them funded by the McKnight Foundation and the other a federal Investing in Innovations grant that we received in partnership with the University of Minnesota. Of course, it is important to mention that we could never provide the programming we do or continue working to find ways to provide comprehensive supports to children and families from age pre-K through third grade without a myriad of community partners. I have mentioned several of the partners already and just want to note that we've listed our major partners here, but there are too many others to list on one slide. DERV Minnesota is one of our largest partners. They provide 23 Minnesota Reading Corps members in pre-K this year and nearly 100 math and Reading Corps members in kindergarten through third grade in St. Paul Public Schools. The work with partners coupled with everything else I've mentioned has led to successful outcomes for our students. The information that you see on this slide is from a 7-year longitudinal study done by Wilder Research. The blue bar indicates the outcomes of children at kindergarten entry after 1 year of participation in the original Project Early Kindergarten program. The green bar notes the outcome of children who did not participate in Project Early Kindergarten but may have been to a childcare or another early learning program in the city. You can see the students in PEK outperformed their peers in all levels assessed. Specifically, if you look at the vocabulary graph, the PEK students scored 9 months ahead of their peers on average, which is an entire school year. The bottom line shows that PEK secured significant gains in student achievement. All three cohorts of children in the Project Early Kindergarten School component showed significant academic and social advantages over their peers when they reached kindergarten. The gains for students in Project Early Kindergarten were also sustained. The third cohort reached third grade last year, 2011 to 2012. Gains of pre-K students remain when comparing third grade MCA reading scores, which we are very proud of. Additionally, district-wide third grade reading proficiency is up 5 percentage points from 2006 to 2012. Last year, district-wide, 87% of our pre-K students were on target for reading, and only 30% were on target prior to the program beginning in 2005. Having a school-based pre-K program provides a smooth transition to kindergarten for both students and families. Key benefits include parents and guardians have an understanding of school systems and how the system works. Students negotiate school routines. They know where the bathroom is. They know how to get to the library or the office. They understand the instructional language of morning meeting and small group instruction. Students experience common academic routines and language. In both pre-kindergarten and kindergarten, the structure of the day is the same so that they understand the flow from one activity to the next. Every year when pre-K students reach kindergarten, they say, "This is just like my old school," primarily because their old school is the classroom down the hall. The kids benefit from quality pre-kindergarten classroom, and so do the parents. Parents find our program prepares their children for success in kindergarten because they have the necessary academic and social skills to interact with other students. Teachers that we've worked with over the years in the school and community settings have also recognized the level of support and have become more efficacious in their work. With the strong emphasis on early learning in St. Paul Public Schools, we've been able to see the gains beyond kindergarten entry. According to the researchers, in the 1990s, the majority of children, over 90% of children entering kindergarten with basic literacy skills who are ready to learn and receive good reading instruction K-3 should be reading at standard by the end of third grade. Every year, the high-quality education and effective teachers count. The following statistics show some positive outcomes, return on investment, if you will. When a district such as St. Paul Public Schools is committed to providing comprehensive supports for early learning, a significant growth in MCA proficiency district-wide between 2006 and 2012 has been shown. For two consecutive years, Minnesota reading proficiency percentage has increased for all subgroups in St. Paul. St. Paul Public School English learners consistently outperform their peers statewide in reading MCAs. Today, in this brief time, I've been able to show you data and give you the numbers for early learning in St. Paul Public Schools. I thank you for your time. I invite you to contact us if you have any other questions or would like to personally see one of our classrooms. I would be more than happy to show you around. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rubel, you mentioned that your Think Small early learning program was extended into home daycares.
Yes. Our Project Early Kindergarten program extended in 2008 into child care centers across the city, as well as family child care homes, and added about 400 children and their families into our program.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Rubel, what kind of follow-up or supports are for the home daycare providers in terms of, I mean, you talked about alignment of your program, so what follow-through is there to see that alignment, you know, has continuity in that programming?
Ms. Rubel.
Mr. Chair and Representative? Is that yes?
Yes.
Okay. we have several things actually happening in St. Paul for follow-up. Initially, the program was set up identical to what was happening in St. Paul, in the school classrooms. So each teacher or parent or provider was offered outside of the home, outside of the center, training once a month to look at what the instructional practices and what the framework of early childhood workshop was and how they could implement that in a home or a child care center as well as a school. In addition to that, they received weekly or biweekly coaching with a licensed educator that went into their home or into their center and worked with the teachers around how to implement the practices that they've had professional development around. As of last year, the funding for the program ended, and we have created cohorts of family providers and cohorts of child care center providers that are meeting on a monthly basis at this point, I believe, and continuing to have conversations in a professional learning community style where they come together with questions and answers and data and look at what's happening in their environment with their students. And that process, our hope is to continue ongoing and add providers as they're interested in the conversation that they're participating in.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is in regards to the licensed parent educators. The question I have is, what license do they carry, who licenses them, and how do they get licensed?
Ms. Rubel.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that actually has changed a little bit this year because we are involved in a new McKnight Foundation grant and the Investing in Innovations grant. Prior to this year, it has been the state of Minnesota parent education license that has been used for hiring our parent educators. This year, we've expanded that to hiring licensed social workers, licensed school psychologists, as well as licensed parent educators and licensed teachers, because we're looking at the position in a broader sense, and their title is now parent engagement coordinators. So they're working with elementary schools, community agencies, and families to coordinate opportunities for families to participate in school types of activities, as well as community and personal growth activities for themselves that are directly related to success for their student in school.
Representative Powell.
I guess I need some help here. When you say a licensed parent educator, is that parents that have that are licensed in early care education, or are they licensed by so they've got a college education and they're licensed by the state as a teacher?
Miserable.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it is in the state of Minnesota, there is a university program that licenses people in a parent education with a parent education license, and it is an educational based license focused on working with families in group settings and is connected very closely tied to our early childhood family education program in the state of Minnesota. Came out of that process.
Representative Paul. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you, Ms. Rubel. Lisa Keller? Just state your name for the record, and then you can go ahead.
Can you hear me? Am I? No. Let me move. I'll go on this side. All right. Now can you hear me? There we go. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cisa Keller. I am the Government Relations Committee Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association, and thank you again for having me here to testify. Again, the Minnesota Child Care Association is an association of almost 250 licensed child care centers throughout Minnesota that operate as small businesses. I'm here today to talk about childcare, specifically childcare centers, and how they benefit young children, their families, and ultimately all of Minnesota. According to a survey conducted by the Wilder Research in 2009, of the 908,000 Minnesota children under the age of 12, almost 600,000 of those are in some sort of childcare arrangement, and over 225,000 are in full-day, full-year childcare. Childcare centers provide a safe, nurturing, age-appropriate environment for children who range in age from 6 weeks old until they are 12 years old. We provide care and education for working families, moms going to school, families looking for early education opportunities, single moms and dads, and dual-income earners. Most childcare centers serve working families and therefore offer early education, early care and education in an all-day, all-year setting. Over 80% of our families pay for childcare out of their own pockets. Childcare is a private market system, and as an industry, childcare in Minnesota is third in gross revenue behind corn and hotel industries. However, currently, very few low-income families are able to access our programs through the Minnesota's Childcare Assistance Program, which has been severely underfunded since 2003. In fact, based on the most recent Department of Human Services family profile, fewer than 25% of child care centers' tuition costs are covered by the child care reimbursement rates. This is well below the federal recommendation of 75%. As a result, most of our most at-risk children do not have access to child care. As of November, there were over 6,000 children on the basic sliding fee child care assistant wait list. And we know that when at-risk children attend high-quality childcare, they are school-ready. In 2005, the Department of Human Services did a study of 22 accredited childcare centers and found that almost twice as many children in accredited childcare centers were rated proficient or school-ready compared to the statewide sample, regardless of income, race, or parents' education. And what does school readiness mean for the state budget? Well, you heard from Dr. Richard Chase yesterday from Wilder Research, and he spoke about a recent study showing that for every child that starts kindergarten not ready, it will cost the state on average $56,000 over the lifetime of that child. And with 50% of our children currently not ready, if as a state we continue to do nothing for these at-risk children, the state will lose $850 million every year. Today's child care programs are part of the solution. Child care does not look like it did 30 years ago. Child care has evolved to move beyond nurturing care to supporting children's learning. You also heard yesterday about the brain research and how very important these first 5 years are. How interactions young children have literally lay the foundations for their future success. Today's child care is about school readiness and lifelong success for every child we care for every child we educate. In our classrooms, you will see degreed teachers utilizing research-based curriculum, developmentally appropriate assessment tools together to identify a child's unique strengths. What looks like play without a purpose is in reality a month-long exploration of what snow is, where does it come from, why is it not found in all parts of the world, and how fun it is to make a snow fort with your friends. Trained, educated teachers provide rich learning environments that promote each child's lifelong pursuit of learning. Today's child care is about intentionality and about maximizing every teachable moment. Classrooms and playgrounds are equipped with educational toys and materials designed to support the developmental needs of infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and school ages, whether these needs are gross motor, social, emotional, or cognitive. And I know that I can sit here and talk to you all day long, but I figured I could show you a short video of what child care actually looks like, and that would probably explain it a lot better than I would. So I'll go ahead and play this.
Now we're in preschool, so I think that this room is in full-blown learning center time right now. Hey boys and girls, I brought some friends to come and see what you're playing with today. Is that okay if we look around your classroom? Is that okay? This classroom right now has a, it's called Sensational Senses. So they've got a senses theme going on right now. So some of the children are exploring the sense of touch. There's a doctor's office back in the corner where they're using their senses so they can see how, if somebody's sick and how they can take care of that. I'm just going to kind of let you see what they're, so these children are 3 turning 4 throughout the school year. Look at that. And I see somebody working on writing their name. That's very wonderful.
It's not
too.
My name.
It's not your name? Whose name is it? You're practicing your strokes, aren't you? Very good. So even at this young of an age, starting with 2.5, they start working on their handwriting skills. We use the Easy Write handwriting curriculum. And each month they practice a different stroke. Hey, good letter strokes, Lindley. Look at you go. That's fantastic. You're not going to show anybody, though? Okay. Okay.
She likes to keep things a little private. But she's been working really hard on her letters.
Right.
And her name, she's loving drawing her name.
Well, she's doing a really good job. And when we're teaching the children how to write, we like to come up with creative, interesting ways to do this. So this is just sand in a tray, but then the children can go ahead and trace in the sand. Anything to get them to do writing, and it's fun at the same time. And there you see some of the different writing strokes that they've been working on. But mostly these guys are very, very, very busy in their dramatic play area right now. Oh, it looks like there's a teddy bear that's sick. Is your teddy bear sick, Molly? Oh my goodness. Did you bring it to, no? Is your baby sick, Cooper?
Yeah.
Oh no, are you bringing it to the doctor?
No.
Or are you going to be the doctor? Who's going to be the doctor?
Mommy.
Huh? Justin, if you put those glasses on, maybe you'll be the doctor. Let's see. Let's see what you look like in your glasses. You put those on? Oh, look at you. Oh my goodness. That makes you look just super smart. What do you think of that? Every classroom has a morning message. Again, this room is doing Sensational Senses. So at the beginning of each month, you're going to ask the children, what do they already know about this topic? What do they want to know about this topic? And at the end, we're going to recap what they've learned about this topic. They do their calendar every day. They've got their word wall. On their word wall, they have their own names, plus they have their vocabulary words that they've been working on as well. And you'll often find the children over here just manipulating the different words, trying to find their name, trying to find their friends' names. Again, in an effort to increase those self-help skills, everything is at their level. If they're thirsty, they come get a cup, they get their own drink of water. They wash their hands, they brush their teeth after lunch, which is an accreditation practice. When there's conflict, teacher intervenes, has the two talk to each other, encourages them to use their words to figure it out, which is just perfect to actually have come across. So again, those emotions that they were beginning to learn as infants, how to identify those feelings, this is where it's coming into play, and we come up with a solution that works for both of them. So as you can see, children all fully engaged in their learning centers. It's a little loud, it's a little messy, but I can guarantee you there's just oodles of learning going on here with really nice teacher interaction as well. And I just feel really fortunate that that's what my preschool rooms are like. Now we're in
So this is part of a 45-minute video I certainly could show, but I figure I'll just do that 4 minutes. So as you can see, childcare in Minnesota is a vital component of the economic stability of Minnesota. Whether you look at it from a child perspective, from a family perspective, from a business perspective, or from a state perspective. I do have a brochure here, or a resource guide about childcare that we can hand out, and we look forward to working with the committee as far as answering any questions you may have throughout the session around childcare. So.
Thank you. Does anyone have questions? Representative Moran? No? No questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Oh, I'm maybe your hand, sorry.
Maybe just an observation. I see a lot of similarities between early education.
Barrett,
and the legislature here regarding interpersonal communication skills and the like. So, thank you.
Ms. Keller, I think you don't have to answer that.
Oh, you know, I certainly, Mr. Chair, representatives, I mean, we could certainly set up some sinks and some drinking cups if that would help, too. So you need more water during the day.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Gail Kelly from Head Start. Ms. Kelly, just introduce yourself and then go ahead.
Great. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gail Kelly. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Head Start Association, and I reside in Duluth, and I'm missing dinner tonight. So. I was told that we had about 5 minutes and some time for questions, so I decided for today's presentation I'd be happy to come back and give you more of an orientation. But I'd like to really focus on Head Start in Minnesota. And you've been provided with two handouts. One is a document called Demonstrating Results that was a synopsis of our work around building a database to understand the need, the child development of kids in Head Start. And the other is a fact sheet that I hope you'll review as you can. And Minnesota Head Start is the association that brings together Head Start programs from across the state. There are 35 nonprofit, community action, tribal nations that provide Head Start services in Minnesota. And we serve around 15,000 children. And we have 15,000 families, excuse me. I think it's important to understand the diversity of the population that we serve. 49% of our enrolled children are racially diverse. 31% have a primary language at home other than English. 13% have a diagnosed disability. And 9% of families are homeless. But in our world, all children have the right to get healthy, strong development. So we don't disaggregate our data by these various indicators, but instead try to look at all the children together and make sure everyone's making strong progress. Our approach is comprehensive. Our goal is to improve school readiness, social competency, health, and promote the self-sufficiency of parents. And I will say that it wasn't until the 2007 reauthorization of Head Start that Congress particularly focused on school readiness. In 1998 was the first time they introduced the idea of curriculum and assessment. So it was really a landmark reauthorization in 2007 that brought to bear all the research, all the new research around school readiness, and put this as a new and stronger component, stronger component for Head Start. And so today, because I have just a short time, I thought we would talk about Head Start outcomes. Head Start is required to use research-based curriculum and assessment, integrate that into the play and activities and stimulation that happens with children. And we're required to assess a children's progress 3 times a year in all our individuals, all of our children. In 2006, Minnesota was the first state in the nation to actually begin to aggregate child assessment data. And it's largely because of you. We're a state-funded program as well as a federally funded program, and we had questions from committees like yours about, well, how are the children making progress in Head Start? So our 35 grantees came together to be able to put that data together so that we could provide you with outcomes for children. In both the demonstrating results and in the fact sheet that I provided you, kind of talk about the development of that database and also about the analysis that went on. We had the Human Capital Research Center do the analysis the first year, and subsequently one of their students, Matthew Hendricks, who's an education economic major and now a professor at Tulsa University, is doing the analysis of that data, so an independent analysis. And one of the things he found in that we've aggregated data now for 3 years, or we have 2 completed years, was that in all Minnesota programs across Minnesota, or all Head Start programs across Minnesota, children are making strong progress in all domains of learning. We have a sample of over 3,000 four-year-olds, and the trends from 2001-2012 patterned after 2010-11 with strong progress for children. And that progress is happening in all domains of learning, from math, social, emotional, literacy, language. We have every child in every program is making good progress. We're very pleased, in particular, as you've heard from other programs, with our partnerships with the Minnesota Reading Corps, WordsWorks, and literacy is one of the strongest progress indicators of all those domains. And I'm particularly pleased that with 31% of our population speaking a language other than English, that Minnesota has really good techniques to help ELL and dual language learners achieve success. I think that you all are familiar with the kindergarten assessment tool. It's a work sampling tool. And Arthur Reynolds, in his work to validate that tool, was able to determine that if a child received 75% of the score on the kindergarten assessment, that work sampling tool, it was predictive of them being able to do well or pass the third grade MCIT scores. So we've used that as a benchmark. And as you can see from this slide, in the fall, about 20% of the kids who were assessed on work sampling were able to get that 75% points. In the spring last year, over 89% of the kids who were assessed on work sampling were able to meet the 75% standard, which is a very strong indicator of their ability, their readiness to enter kindergarten. Now, since we have a short time, and I know that you had a conversation about the Head Start Impact Study, I just want to reiterate, I know that Dr. Grunwald said that he would provide you with more information, and he indicated that he would be getting something to the committee. But I want to be clear that the Head Start Impact Study is the first large-scale evaluation of an early intervention program that's gone to scale. And that is that it's in every county and every community across the nation. It's never been done before, a randomized sample of such a large program. And what they did was they randomized and selected children who were in Head Start, and the control group was a group of children that were on waiting lists or wanted to get into a program like Head Start. But they didn't restrict those children from going into other early care and education programs. As a matter of fact, the control group, about 25%, actually got into Head Start before the end of the study. But with all those constraints and challenges, it was still one of the largest randomized studies of this program. And they found that at the end of the year, that the children 9 months, and this is a 1 year, looking at 1 year performance, at the end of those 9 months, that Head Start children outperformed the control group in every domain that was studied, including cognitive, social, emotional, health, and parenting impacts. But the story goes on, and many of you have heard, that as they followed the children into kindergartner and first grade and third grade, the differences between the Head Start children and the control group did flatten out. And those were particularly related to measurements in cognition of spelling, math, and language and some literacy. That flattening out has been discussed before, and we are confident that the differences between the control group and the Head Start at the end of the Head Start year pattern what we found in other studies that still show large cost benefits in terms of the medium and long-term results. And we have many other studies that validate the fact that these children are less likely to need retention. They're less likely to, they're more likely to graduate, less likely to commit a crime, and have other long-term benefits that is one of the reasons why they have such strong cost benefit for these studies. In conclusion, though, the National Advisory Committee, I think, to make good recommendations for what we need to do in the future. This study was done in 2002, and they suggested from the study that we should continue to make quality improvements and optimize the dosage of Head Start and early Head Start. So you see the kinds of improvements that we've been working on are right in line with the recommendations. They also suggest that we look at ways that gains can be maintained and build upon in elementary school. And on that, we applaud the Commissioner of Education for her work to really encourage alignment between early child and elementary school so that our at-risk kids can have a smooth transition into elementary school. So unless there are any questions, I'll conclude here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. One of the things that I noticed that you spoke about that within Head Start is they progress to third grade, it kind of flattened out. Mm-hmm. And in relationship to the St. Paul presentation where their program is from pre-K to third grade, in her presentation she spoke about the evaluation that followed the cohorts to third grade, that the gains remained and that there was consistent progress and proficiency by 5 percentage points. And so it's kind of like when you have a program that is consistent, that advances what happens in pre-K or Head Start, and that continues, that same kind of consistent learning persists through kindergarten, first grade, second, third grade. It seems that those gains are maintained.
Right.
Ms. Kelly?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. One of the things that we're looking forward to is Minnesota is a part of the longitudinal data system, and one of the things we are emerging on is a partnership with the Department of Education so that we can look back at children who have been in Head Start and see where they are in Minnesota in third grade. So you'll be seeing more data as we're able to merge those data systems into the future, because we feel very strongly that the gains that children are making now, again, with good partnerships with the schools, can be sustained in, well beyond third grade. But we also are frustrated somewhat with the measurement tools, because it isn't all about some of the things that we measure. One of the things I'll tell you is that children that participate in early childhood really learn self-control. They learn a sense of fairness, and all those other things that are so helpful in their success. And we see that, but we haven't been able to measure it by standardized tests. So I also look forward to expanding what we measure in early childhood so we can tell a better story, I think, too.
Representative Moran.
No, thank you.
Representative Hall.
I would just like to thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make the comment, if you can bring that self-control and fairness to the legislature, I think we could all use some.
Sir, if you'd like to come to Head Start, you're welcome anytime.
Ms. Kelly, we'll enroll Representative Howe in your Head Start program. I had a question. Ms. Kelly, you said Commissioner Casilius is aiding the transition to K-3. What can you spend a few sentences?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Casilius has been working on helping the early childhood community and the school districts do an alignment process. It's horizontal and vertical alignment. It came out of a researcher in Harvard who's really shown that when you can set up expectations from early childhood well into the third grade and work together to meet those expectations going all the way along, that you can have better successes later. And so she has encouraged districts to meet with their early childhood programs and see what their have common expectations for kindergarten readiness. And I know a number of our Head Start programs are participating with their districts in those alignment processes.
Thank you. One other thing, you mentioned studies on the what most people call the IQ brain function versus
right.
the executive brain function, and I think everybody is starting to learn that the executive brain function is the success in life is probably most important with that. So if you have studies on how Head Start or certain other programs compare to NON or others, I'd like to have you get us copies of them or something.
I'd be happy to. Many of them may not be specific just to Head Start, but other early childhood programs, but I'll pull together the things that...
Anything like that would be helpful to us.
The Incredible Years research is one area that would be of particular interest to you.
Okay, thank you. Tom Holton?
Thank you.
Mr. Holton, just introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Mulnery, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I'm Tom Holton, Director of Community Education for Bloomington Richfield Public Schools. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education and the Minnesota Community Education Association, and I think most importantly, our youngest learners in Minnesota. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Today in my presentation, I'm going to cover two topics. One is school-based school readiness programs. Broadly across the state of Minnesota, you heard about the St. Paul program, so I'm going to be touching on some of the other things that are happening across the state, as well as providing some selected outcome data from some multiple school districts across the state that are a result of that programming. So on to the overview. And this, of course, in fairness of your time, is a very brief overview of school readiness and school-based programs. But we do serve about 150,000 3- and 4-year-olds across the state of Minnesota. There are 334 school districts that have state-financed school readiness programs. We serve about 9.3% of the 3-year-olds and about 26% of the 4-year-olds on an annual basis. All of our programs have licensed teachers, and they are in advance of representatives. Question: those are licensed teachers with teaching degrees, 4-year degrees, licensed in the Department of Education. We're part of the public school system, so many of the things you heard about integrating, aligning curriculums, teaching strategies, and assessments, we're doing, and it's easy for us to do that because we are part of the school system. We integrate our programming. Not everywhere in all cases with early childhood family education programs, adult basic education programs, with public health, Minnesota Reading Corps, licensed daycare providers, unlicensed daycare providers in some cases, and in outstate Minnesota, very common to coordinate programming with Head Start because they don't have enough students to create individual independent programs. The Minnesota State Legislature's investment is just over $10 million to serve those 150,000 3- and 4-year-olds, and parent fees and local funding through foundations, grants, and fees charged to parents make that total budget an additional $22 million to the $10 million. And individual programs in individual communities are based on individual community expectations, needs, and family needs that vary from community to community. I'm going to jump to one specific example of outstate programming. We often talk about early childhood in the Twin Cities. And I'm going to give you an example of some of the flexibility of programming that happens in outstate Minnesota to meet family needs. They do some of their parent education. We believe in early childhood education that the parent is always the first and the most important teacher, and that's particularly important in the early years. So without impacting parents, you really minimize the its success you can have with students. And that's particularly clear with students that are at risk. So in Wilmer, for instance, they do some of their parent education and their school readiness work in places such as the library, the jail, and when this came in from Wilmer, it just said J-O-T-S. And I don't like acronyms, so I had to call Steve Risendine in Wilmer and said, what is that? And that's a Genio Turkey Store. That's the turkey plant in Wilmer, where they actually do programming with families and kids right there at the turkey plant. And they do it at their area learning center, which is high school kids that are struggling to finish high school. They do a variety of programming. They have programs that go from 5 to 40 hours per week in intensity. They have satellite sites where they provide scholarships that work with home day and licensed daycare providers through the piloted Parent Aware Scholarship Program that's going on across the state. And they work with numerous community partners. 70% of their participants are qualified for free and reduced lunch. They have 38% of their participants are of diverse background, and they serve 155 children. That's just one community, one snapshot, and you can go from community to community and see examples of how they adapted their programming to meet their needs. We did some surveying of outcome data. We are hoping, and I see Director Cadigan back there working on some common assessments so we can do a better job across the state of saying how ready are our children. But we talked to the people in Byron, Minnesota, and they provided some assessment results using the work sampling system that was referred to earlier. And as you can see, that the students that were participants in their school readiness program in the work sampling, and they talked about Arthur Reynolds' study of having, if you've got 80% of the domains mastered or score 75%, 75 or 80%, that's predictive of reading at third grade, which we all know is an important milestone for kids to be successful throughout school. And as you can see, that in 2010-11, reading, math, and literacy, the proficiency rates are well above that baseline. And so they're producing results that are predictive that those kids will be on track at third grade for reading and math. I'd like to jump now from outstate Minnesota to Bloomington, Richfield, and talk a little bit about our particular program and the results of that program. Like St. Paul, we have had a focused, targeted program since 2005 that focuses on children in particular risk, and we are currently serving about 200 of those four-year-olds in Bloomington and Richfield. And to get into that program, you have to be an English language learner or free and reduced. And as a matter of fact, over 90% of our children in that program are both EL and children in poverty. So we're reaching at the most challenged learners in that program. We provide a half day of programming at a cost of about $4,200 per child. And many of the things you heard about, quality licensed teachers, a balanced curriculum, an aligned curriculum, attention to all the learning domains of kids are all things that we do in that program that other testifiers have shared with you. So I want to jump right to the results. If you look at our Kinder Prep results for 2010 and 2011, in Bloomington for about 10 years, we've done early kindergarten assessment where we assess every incoming kindergarten student in the first month of kindergarten. And we have an assessment that measures both literacy and math domains, and these are highly predictive, better than 80%, that if children are on track at our minimum level for kindergarten, they'll be reading and at grade level on the MCA at third grade and pass the MCAs in third grade. And as you can see, in both 2010 and 11, our Kinder Prep students scored at the 94% level in reading and 84% level in math. And we're proud to say, if you talk about a gap, but that 94% reading in 2010 and 92 and 11, our most at-risk students who had that intervention outscored the average student in Bloomington and Richfield for those 2 years. The question of does it last, is there fade-out, always comes up. And so the next slide, I'd like to show you our first group of students that we served in 2005. And in all areas that we track these students in third grade, and the areas were reading, math, our CULT score, which is predictive of the MCA, report cards, all of our students, you can see that impact remained. And I'd like to focus on this specific slide. If you look at, again, the district totals, about 81% of our Bloomington students in that first cohort, 81% of our students scored proficient on MCA reading. Of our early reading first cohort, this was our first group of kids that were in our at-risk program, 78% of those kids scored reading proficient at third grade. And I might point out that those same kids who poverty and EL, those risk factors didn't go away, and our diversity changed over that time. So we were very proud of that number. We followed a cohort of similar students that didn't have that intervention, and their passage rate in the MCA at third grade was 51%. So it's not just a marginal or incremental gain, that's a substantial gain, and it was, and we were able to maintain that over time. In my closing comments, and I know you've heard testimony today and all week long and last week about the impact of early ed, I think over the last 20 years we've discovered that starting behind means that kids are going to stay behind. And we start the achievement gap well before kids start kindergarten. We know that the early investment has the greatest economic return. And we know that that early investment has a great, the best student outcome. I would propose that we know what works. And one of our issues is, all of the people you've heard testify today, that the investment that we've made, even though we've known what works, has been woefully short over the last few years. For school readiness programs, as an example, the last funding increase was in 1991. And if you think of inflation and how our population has changed in diversity, the challenges have grown, yet we've stayed at that same funding level. And if any of you have had a chance to do the math from the front page, if you take the state investment of $10 million and divide it by those 170,000 students, you can do the math. I'll do it for you. Each school district in Minnesota, on average, gets $67 per 3- and 4-year-old to take on this big challenge. So that ends my testimony, and I'll be glad to answer questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Okay, thank you. Ann McCulley? Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I just have one slide that's going to act as a visual, or I hope it will. I can get started and it'll pop up. Good afternoon. My name is Ann McCulley, and I'm Executive Director of the newly renamed Child Care Aware of Minnesota. As it says on your agenda, we just changed to that name from 25 years of being known as Child Care Resource and Referral. So I wouldn't blame you for being confused. We are a standalone nonprofit agency that works in a coordinated fashion, working with 14 different agencies around the state. And together we serve as the state's child care infrastructure when it comes to parent information about child care and provider quality supports, two key components of building a quality early care and education system. The core functions of our system are actually in state statute, and that's not something everyone knows, and we are funded through a contract with the Department of Human Services. Primarily, this funding comes from the federal quality dollars, the Federal Child Care Development Fund, the money that comes to each state for child care assistance in our case. States are required to spend a minimum of 4% of that funding on what's broadly termed as quality activities. So that is what primarily works throughout our system to carry forward the work we do. You have a brief overview coming around. Two tools are coming around. One is a map that will show you the regions that we serve, and we are structured around the governor's economic development regions, for those of you that have memorized that map. On the front is the map. On the back is the list of agencies. For those of you, hopefully you can find the agency that serves your area. We really are a collection of agencies working together as a system is how I describe it. So we have community action agencies. We have a couple of technical colleges. We have some standalone nonprofits. But the commonality is everyone has a contract and a scope of services to carry out this work that we now call Child Care Aware. The other document you have is an overview just of our broad mission, our vision, and our beliefs, so that I won't need to read those to you today, but you'll have them in front of you. And then I'll get into talking a little bit more about Parent Aware as well. One thing I'd like to talk about in these opportunities is the fact that, and I know you've had a lot of presentations from researchers, so I won't go into a lot of that, but I think when we think about child care, we really want to constantly stress the idea that child care is early learning. And so when we talk about pre-K, we think of pre-K as an age group, and whether that child is in a pre-K room of a child care center, or in a school readiness program, as was just discussed, or is in a licensed family child care home that happens to be three, those are all places where quality early learning can happen. And so this somewhat artificial line that sometimes gets drawn between child care and early learning is something we're constantly trying to break down. I know others have said it, but I can't miss a chance to reinforce it with you. Our system's definition, however, of childcare also extends to what is usually termed family, friend, and neighbor care. So part of the work we do also focuses on those who are providing care who are not licensed, but that might be a grandma who's providing once a week care for their grandchild for 6 months, let's say, but it also might be a neighbor who's done this routinely over time for a family member on the block. Those are, in our mind, that's childcare as well. And whatever setting children are in, I would sum it up as saying, whatever child setting the child is in, whatever they're cared for, they're entitled to safe and loving care. Every family deserves information on quality care and choosing care that will help their children grow. And every care professional should have access to excellent, tailored professional growth opportunities. So the vision that you see up in front of you, which is hopefully visible, really tries to show you that as a system, we work with families, we work with providers, and we work with the community. And in all cases, we're advocating and supporting them. We really are an infrastructure function, and it's a little bit different than some of the other groups that might come before you who work with one or another of those audiences. We really see our role as working with all three, so that might be a little bit different. Go a little deeper here for you on what we actually do. First of all, Child Care Aware helps families understand child care choices. And again, when I say child care, we actually maintain a database of all early learning programs that we can get our hands on. So licensed family child care centers, school-based programs, pre-K, Head Start. And we help talk to parents about their choices. We help them understand what can be a very complicated market with a lot of terminology that's not very familiar if you're new at this in particular. When families face language barriers or cost barriers or transportation barriers, those choices are even harder. Mm-hmm. And so we try to do our best to reduce those barriers for parents and give them the information, understanding that ultimately they are the final decision makers. This has expanded to, of course, include Parent Aware. We help parents understand what Parent Aware is, what those ratings mean, but again, understanding that that's a tool and parents are going to make the final decision themselves. 23,000 families last year turned to their local Child Care Aware of Minnesota system or agency to have that kind of help and consultation and choosing care. We also know that the well-being of our children depends on the knowledge and the training of child care providers. These are often unsung, unacknowledged heroes, frankly, who contribute greatly to our early education, our K-12 system. In support of that goal, we serve as the primary delivery system for professional development opportunities throughout the state of Minnesota, for child care in particular. We served over 33,000 participants last year. Over 2,000 training sessions were held. Some of those were done face-to-face throughout the map that you see. Others we do through an online program called Eager to Learn, which is a sequential training program where providers come on weekly, do chats. It's not the kind of self-study online you might be thinking of, so the content really does get out there. We serve providers in other communities, Head Start, that kind of pre-K programs, et cetera, but there's no question that the bulk of our audience and the core audience we serve are child care providers, both family child care and licensed center providers. I don't know if Dr. Chase yesterday talked about his workforce study, but one of the statistics looked at the question of where do providers get their continuing education, and over 70% of the family child care providers in Minnesota say our system is the first place they turn. About 80% of those in rural areas say that they get at least some or all of their training through our system. So we really do consider ourselves the core training and professional development system. This is another place, a really important intersection with Parent Aware, because a lot of the training that we are now doing and focusing on has to do with helping providers get into that program and also move through that program, making sure the kinds of training and skill sets are there at costs that are also reasonable. The other place that we have a role is with scholarships and grants to help providers continue their quality. We put nearly $500,000 into the child care system last year for providers who went back and got their either CDA credential, which is a credential you can get either for profit, for credit or non-credit, but also AA degrees and BA degrees. So we can help through our Teach Early Childhood Scholarships providers who want to do that. And we also run a program called Retain, because we recognize that good, educated teachers who are staying in the classroom with those same children, that whole issue of continuity of care is so important. So we have some bonus grants we can give to providers who have an education and are making a commitment to stay in their program. And then finally, we helped a lot of programs underwrite the costs of their training. Finally, our Child Care Aware agencies work in collaboration, now we're to the community circle, at the community level all around the state. I don't think there's an early childhood collaborative out there that we don't try to make sure we at least have a finger in if we can. Looking at the large regional areas we have to serve, we can't be at all the tables, but we try really hard because our folks are in touch with all those communities. It's often difficult for child care providers to be at those tables. If we can be there speaking on behalf of providers, on behalf of parents, what we're hearing, what we're learning, and contribute to that, to the conversation, we like to do that. Here at the state level, our agency and I in particular work in collaboration with just about everybody in this room in terms of providing data, in terms of bringing in, again, what we've learned to the policy discussions. So I just want to end spending a little bit in-depth time on the question of Parent Aware, because I know you're hearing about it a lot, and you're probably going to hear about it more, and what exactly our role is in relation to that project.
Sorry, but can you really cut it? We've got three more.
I'm so sorry. I thought I had it timed out. I will cut to the chase. I will just say that our system is the primary implementation arm for Parent Aware at the community level for programs that want to be fully rated. So if a child care provider, family child care center provider wants to go through the Parent Aware system, it is a community, local resource, and what we used to call resource and referral, staff person who does the recruitment, the information sessions, helps them go through the technical assistance and coaching, helps them get their quality document packet in and get their rating, and then once they get their rating, they receive their improvement supports, and our staff, again, are the ones that help them move through those improvement supports. So at some point during the coming year, if you have questions about how that project is going, that might be something that I or our staff can come in and give you some more information about.
If
that.
You could stay around, maybe we'll, if,
sure.
Depending on
Absolutely.
What happens, or people have questions of you
That's
directly afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If it's okay with us, everybody, I'd try and get it out, since some people probably want to go to dinner before the governor's.
Dinner sounds
before
good
we have
Mr.
to
Chair.
Be back. This, we have an evening. Dan Evans. Ahead, Mr. Evans, and introduce yourself. And
Chair Mulray, committee. I'm Dan Evans from Child Care Works. I'm the policy director. One moment while I open my speech here. So we originally had a child care provider scheduled to testify with me to talk about the importance of the Child Care Assistance Program. She had a family emergency and couldn't make it, so I will be discussing those points. Briefly. So, Child Care Works is a statewide child care advocacy organization whose mission is to achieve and sustain affordable, high-quality child care options for families and communities. As we have discussed in this committee, leading research in child development distinguishes ages birth to five as a critical period of brain growth and development. The interactions children have with their parents and caregivers during these early years literally build the foundation for a child's success in school and in life. Thus, the child care experiences an infant, toddler, and preschooler have are a crucial component of a child's eventual kindergarten readiness. Our first priority this session is to strengthen the continuity of care that young children experience. As healthy development depends upon a young child building strong, continuous relationships with parents and caregivers, we want to make sure that our public policy priorities reflect that and that we look to prioritize the continuity of care when we talk about our state's children. Our second priority is to ensure that the child care experiences children have are high quality, so we are advocating for state support and standards that encourage child care providers to make quality investments in their child care services. There are a variety of tools that allow us to address the unique challenge of providing high-quality, stable care for all of Minnesota's children. Early childhood scholarships and the further implementation of Parent Aware are part of the solution. We focus on the role of the Child Care Assistance Program to ensure that families have access to the care they need. The Child Care Assistance Program provides critical child care assistance to low-income families in Minnesota. The system was built with the intent to provide work support. However, the program also serves as a source of needed care for approximately 35,000 children of low-income families. CCAP, the Child Care Assistance Program, is divided into the MFIP and basic sliding fee portions. Those families at the lowest levels on MFIP are assured child care support from the state. Those families on the BSF portion, however, would then pay a fee. And these families are not guaranteed child care support. There's a waiting list based on how much each county has to support the Child Care Assistance Program. So if you're on MFIP and you're at that lowest income level, then you have full child care support. If you're on basic sliding fee, then you may or may not, depending on which county you're in. And just to give you a quick idea of what this means, to be eligible for the program for a family of three, you would need to have an income below $33,786 per year. So we're talking pretty low numbers, and those families don't even necessarily have access. Currently, there are more than 7,000 families on the waiting list statewide. We are concerned with families on the waiting list. In coordination with Hennepin County, we undertook research to learn more about these families and find out what was going on with their kids while they were on the waiting list portion. What we found was very concerning. We found that many families were telling us that they were forced to take any child care they could find, anyone they could trust with their kids, any relative, any caregiver, anyone in their apartment. We even heard some folks saying that they had to quit their jobs in order to stay at home and watch their kids, which is, of course, counterproductive for a work support program. We also did outreach in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, and Minneapolis, and we found a lot of these same issues. And we've also talked to folks in Greater Minnesota events and heard some of the same problems around the waiting list. So we're finding these issues with CCAP, but these issues are all based on money that we're just unwilling to spend to fully forecast the program. We would like to see CCAP fully forecasted so these families that need child care services receive it, and so our at-risk kids have the opportunity to access stable, quality child care services. We would also like to see the entrance income level increase so more families can access child care. What we see in child care, in brief, is similar to what we see in health care, where you see this donut hole. You see folks at the very bottom on MFIP who have child care covered, and you see private pay families who can afford it, and then you see many working families in the middle who are faced with these, you know, impossible dilemmas of not being able to afford child care. We're coming to this recognition of how important quality child care is, and that it's expensive to provide quality child care, so we need to make sure the supports are in place, especially so our low-income kids can have that continuity of care and those quality environments that help lead to kindergarten readiness and success in school and life. So finishing up, in accordance with our commitment to quality child care, we also support efforts to build greater incentives in the Parent Aware program to increase provider participation and reward quality improvement efforts. The governor's budget calls for reimbursement differentials that for those providers that are in CCAP and are currently either a 4-star or a 3-star rated program. So if you're a 4-star rated program at Parent Aware, you'll get a 20% reimbursement differential. So that means normally you would be paid by the CCAP program a certain rate to provide care. Now you'd get an additional 20% if you're 4-star. You get an additional 15% if you're 3-star. We support these incentives. We support additional incentives to underwrite quality improvements, to create incentives. Because when you think about a child care provider, many of these are small businesses. you know, it's expensive to improve quality, and we want to build incentives so the child care providers are concerned with improving the quality and that they see benefits and rewards from investing in increased quality in their programs. So we look forward to continuing to discuss these issues, and we look forward to working with the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you wait just to see if there's questions?
Sure.
We'll try and get everybody to... No, I meant...
Oh, just... wait off stage.
Wait in the back of the stage.
Right, right.
not at the podium or something.
Thank you.
Marlene Blake and Lisa Thompson.
Hello.
Who's Marlene?
I am Marlene.
You are? I've been told that you're from God's country, so you can go first. Introduce yourself, just your name, and then
okay,
go ahead.
My name is Marlene Blake, and I'm a child care provider in Minneapolis. And I wanted to thank you for inviting us to come and talk about my job that is really, really, really important to families and to children and to myself. So, and thank you for the work that you're doing to help us facilitate policies that helps child care providers and children across the state. Well, as I said before, I'm Marlene Blake, and my child care is in Minneapolis, and I serve over, well, many, many, many families, many children. I have 5 children of my own, and who are very well adjusted, and that's probably one of the reasons why I felt I could be a child care provider. A little bit about myself. I have a degree in child development and child psychology from the University of Minnesota. I also have a master's in education from Concordia College. And with my background in education, I decided that child care providing would be a great occupation for myself. I'm not saying that all child care providers need to have the kind of background that I have, but I just wanted to let you know. I chose daycare because it is a very rewarding job. I see the first smiles many times, kids rolling over for the first time, the first steps that children make, and the first sound that they're making that is very adorable. So that's one of the reasons why I'm in childcare. Also, childcare is very demanding. It's a very demanding job. The hours are very long sometimes, and sometimes it's also very isolating, where you really don't have another person to speak to or to bounce off ideas from, like if you have a coworker, because usually the provider is alone in the home with the children. And so therefore, I know it's a rosy, and it's a very exciting job, but there's also other issues that goes along with it. And fortunately, we are one of the first point of resource for many families who are seeking child care, because we're safe, we're affordable, and we're convenient. We're in the neighborhood, we're in the community. Sometimes our kids play with other members in the community, so they really know us, and they can trust us that we are going to take very good care of their children. And back to the isolating part, that's one of the reasons why I chose to join CCPT, which is Child Care Providers Together. It's a union that's helping to connect providers all around the, I'm in Hennepin County at this point, so all around Hennepin County, so that we can be a support for each other, and being able to access resources that is well needed, like additional training, funding for supplies and equipment, for renovation for our homes, and for many services that child care providers are needing, so that they can continue to provide those excellent service to families. And so that's about it for me. Thank you for letting me speak.
We're getting really short on time. Lisa Thompson, do you want to, about 3 minutes or so?
Mr. Chair? My name is Lisa Thompson. I'm also a licensed family child care provider. I am in St. Paul, and I'm also president of CCPT, Child Care Providers Together, AFSCME's Local 3400. And I thank you, this committee, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee, for allowing us to come here today and give you the perspective of the frontline experts. We have the hands-on knowledge that's vital to making meaningful improvements to the early childhood education system, as well as preserving the strengths that exist right now. I am a 4-star rated Parent Aware Program provider. I now hold accreditation from the National Association of Family Child Care, and it was very fun to hear mention of Project Early Kindergarten, PEK. I was one of the first cohorts of that program for family child care providers as well. I am really fortunate that I happen to live in a neighborhood that happens to be one of the pilot areas on almost every program, it seems. One of the things that I've noticed, and just a side note on that, is that in my neighborhood, 55106 is my zip code, and it is one of the most densely populated zip codes of licensed family child care providers. It's also one of the most densely, it represents one of the highest concentration of accredited providers in the state. And I believe that the funding investments that have been made in quality improvement programs over the past, I want to say 5 to 10 years, has been in direct relationship to that. We're providing quality care. We're giving this to the children, and we were given the opportunity to be able to demonstrate what we're doing, as well as find the programs that help us to make those improvements that match the research and what shows that little extra bit to help improve our programs. You've heard a lot about the research, and Ms. Blake and I did not bring a PowerPoint presentation for you. We didn't bring any formal research for you today, but we do bring for you the firsthand perspective of what it's like to see children learning and growing, what it means to them to have that continuity care that Mr. Evans spoke of, and of any environment, this is continuity of care. We see them in their first time in care when their parent has to go back to work or chooses to go back to work. And we often see them at their high school graduation. And in my case, a little seasoned provider here, I now have the children of some of the children I cared for. Now that's continuity of care. One of the things that I've learned in working with, being connected with other providers like Marlena, is that family child care does look a little bit like it did 30 years ago in many ways. And it also looks a little bit different. The video that you saw of a child care center is much of what's happening in family child care, but it's a snapshot. It's one child, it's three children with one-on-one provider who they've known their entire life often. And we are a very small setting where the one-on-one care that parents come to rely on, it's often the first choice of parents for care for their children, and it's often around the state the only choice for parents to find a place for their children while they work. We work with many of the programs like Project Early Kindergarten and Head Start, and bring our educational background like Ms. Blake has talked about. In providing the care for our children in a way that is important, that matches our values, that's important to us and important to many of the families that we serve. One of the things that we've talked about as in our groups and committees of family child care providers across the state with Child Care Providers Together is that we recognize the importance of training. And we also talked about some of the barriers that we face in getting that training, and some of the the primary things that we've identified is that it has to be affordable to us. It has to be accessible to us. And living here in St. Paul, that was a new concept for me until I started talking to providers up in Bemidji and Thief River Falls who have to close and drive for hours or spend the night in a hotel somewhere in order to get a training, in order to stay open and come back on Monday morning to reopen their program. Affordable, accessible, and then there's relevant. One of the things that we have heard over and over again for family child care providers is that we have a lot of challenges in finding training that matches the people, the experience that we bring to this job, and the difference that our job, the different challenges that we face in teaching children. And with that, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to testify for you here today.
Thank you. Are there any questions of any of the last three? Oh, Representative Reiner, sorry.
Mr. Chair, I know you're anxious and we're over time, but my question is for Ann McCulley, and she doesn't have to answer it now, actually. But I'm really interested. It's a question I raised in another committee context regarding Parent Aware, and it's the issue of alignment. And I just, while you're getting ready to answer that, I'm assuming that you changed your name to align with Parent Aware so that there was a clear connection. And that's interesting to me in itself because you have a long history as child care resource and referral. So,
McCulley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brainerd, that there's just a quick, if you do want to know that history, that is actually our new national name. It is a happy serendipity and coincidence that it aligns with the name Parent Aware, but Child Care Aware, we're the fifth state in the nation to go to that name. It just happens to be the name they chose nationally.
Wow.
We'd like to think that we look that much more intelligent, but honestly, it's just happy. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Briner, your question.
Well, my question was regarding the alignment question, because that's a concern I have regarding our in-home daycare programs that are rated, which obviously it's a high-quality product according to a standard that's research-based, but the alignment question involves transitions that school-based programs have built in. Because students are in those programs, those classrooms are aligned to the schools they're within and the curriculum of the K-12 system. And I'm wondering how Parent Aware considers the alignment question.
Sure. Ms. McCullough. Mr. Chair, Representative Brainerd, I think I realize you're talking about, for instance, the Project Early K program as an example where there was work to particularly connect up. And I was actually on the early advisory committee for that, so that was a fabulous project. I think even before Parent Aware, there's always been an effort to try to encourage through our system early childhood programs connecting with the K-12 system. I think a lot of the work that the Initiative Foundations have been doing to bring together those populations, some of what Ms. Kelly talked about too, to try to connect pre-K to grade 3, all have been in the works over the years. It's just this constant drumbeat to try to bring those groups together. There are elements under Parent Aware, and I'm scrambling to think off the top of my head, that have to do with helping parents connect to resources in the community, for instance, parent education or other kinds of screening systems that are done through the schools. I don't know that we right now award points for anything that connects that child care directly to the school, but it's absolutely something the spirit of that is something that's always been and will continue to be important.
Thank you. Representative Moran? No? Any other one? Okay. Thank you, everyone, and the meeting is adjourned.